This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 18th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 156. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Big Deal feature, this week on the campaign trail, and my guest is Bryce Cassavant, the former Conservation Service officer and former NDP candidate. Bryce says that this election should not be taking place. He says it is part of a global trend by governments to water down democracy and grab power during the pandemic. I'll also award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or do you want your government to decide what you can read, watch, or listen to? The October 24th election was supposed to be in October next year, but John Horgan wanted to get a majority sooner. His party planned an us-against-them narrative in its playbook that was leaked to me. An election is about being divisive. But is the time right when BC is suffering the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic? Dr. Bonnie Henry's Be Kind, Be Calm, and Be Safe is the pandemic mantra in BC. But an election campaign is neither kind nor calm, no matter where it's held. On October 16th, the NDP called for the firing of New Westminster BC Liberal candidate Lorraine Brett. Brett's crime? Tweeting in favor of J.K. Rowling's controversial Reasons for Speaking Out on Sex and Gender Issues essay last June. The Harry Potter author has become a lightning rod for those who say she is transphobic. She insists she is not. Brett and the BC Liberals say they support the LGBTQ community, but that's not good enough for some in the NDP. The culture war is happening on the BC campaign trail. Where will it go next? If the NDP gets a majority, will there be a slippery slope? Will authors, musicians, and filmmakers whose opinions don't correspond with the governing party find themselves cancelled? BC's Human Rights Code bans discrimination on race, color, ancestry, age, religion, disability, sexual orientation, and gender identity. The Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Canada's supreme law, protects freedom of thought, belief, opinion, and expression. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, attacker targets Taiwan restaurant that supports Hong Kong protesters. A masked assailant pushed his way into a Taipei restaurant on October 16th and scattered chicken manure over kitchen equipment and a staff member. The Aegis restaurant was opened this year to support young people from Hong Kong who study on the island or relocated there from Hong Kong after participating in last year's pro-democracy protests. Taipei's city government condemned the attack and ordered city police to use full resources in hunting down the assailant. In ABC News Australia, Chinese personal shoppers and Australian brands devastated by the impact of coronavirus. The bankruptcy of major logistic providers for the Daigou industry has left about 7,000 parcels missing. Daigou is the Chinese word for surrogate shopping. Shoppers in Australia and Canada are paid to buy goods that are exported to China. Dairy and supplement brands have lost millions in revenue because of a downturn in the Daigou channel. About a third of Daigou specialty stores in Australia have closed. In the Bangkok Post, Cabinet confirms state of emergency, curfew if protests escalate. The Prime Minister of Thailand told reporters a curfew banning people from leaving home at night might be imposed if the situation escalated. He insisted the situation did not warrant the declaration of martial law. Cabinet approved a one-month state of emergency after protests erupted, including those that blocked the Royal Motorcade and caused greater risk of coronavirus spread. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland protesters topple statues of Theodore Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln. A group of protesters toppled statues of former presidents Roosevelt and Lincoln and shattered the entrance to the Oregon Historical Society in Portland's South Park blocks late October 11th before moving into other areas of downtown, smashing storefronts and engaging in other acts of destruction. Protest organizers have promoted the event on social media as an Indigenous People's Day of Rage. President Donald Trump called for arrests and federal intervention. In the Seattle Times, Lummi Nation withdraws from AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine trial. The tribe, Washington's third largest, cited ongoing communications challenges with AstraZeneca. Tribal members had yet to receive a vaccination as part of AstraZeneca's clinical trial. The AstraZeneca clinical trial remains on hold for investigation in the United States after a volunteer developed an illness. The New York Times has reported trials for the AstraZeneca vaccine have resumed in other countries. An August study said 1.3% of COVID-19 cases are in First Nations communities, even though they only make up 0.7% of U.S. population. Native Americans are hospitalized at 5.3 times the average. In the Abbotsford News, family of dead BC football star sues Saskatchewan government. The family of former Abbotsford Panthers football star Samuel Uko opened legal proceedings against the Saskatchewan Health Authority and the government of Saskatchewan. Uko, who was visiting family in Regina, requested that his cousin take him to Regina General Hospital on the morning of May 21st after he was experiencing mental health issues. A nurse at RGH told the cousin he could not accompany Uko inside the hospital due to COVID-19 restrictions. He was taken a second time to hospital, this time by police, but he was escorted out of the hospital for not being able to give his name and other information. His body was later discovered in a lake. The Saskatchewan Health Authority later apologized to his parents. Teammate Chase Claypool, a rookie phenom with the Pittsburgh Steelers, wears Uko's name on his wrist in tribute. This week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Surrey Guilford BC Liberal candidate sued in land flip flap. Island Health recruits hospital workers for long-term care facilities despite single-site order. Inside the NDP government's frantic hunt to find N95 masks for doctors, nurses. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news.
John Horgan.
Andrew Wilkinson.
Sonia First Now.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. A Saturday night surprise shook up the BC election campaign. Mo Amir, a social media influencer with the podcast, has a background as a BC Liberal insider. On October 10th, he tweeted a video clip from the September 17th Zoom roast for the retiring West Vancouver Capilano MLA Ralph Sultan. North Vancouver Seymour incumbent Jane Thornthwaite's ongoing personality clash with North Vancouver Lonsdale NDP MLA Bowen Ma turned the BC Liberal campaign upside down.
Bowen is, you know, very pretty lady, and she knows that she's got it, and she knows how to get Ralph going. And this is my roast part for Ralph. Day after, he's telling us in caucus that we cannot accept what Bowen Ma says anymore because she's not saying the truth and she's taking credit for stuff that she shouldn't be taking credit for. So I go to an event, and one of them was the CAPU Student Union Luncheon. And both Bowen Ma and Ralph were stuck on the couch together, very, very close together, for almost the entire time. We were supposed to be, yes, Ralph, you remember that. We were supposed to be networking and all this, but Bowen knows how to get you. She knows how to get you.
The scandal overshadowed release of the BC Liberal platform, Andrew Wilkinson.
And so as the remarks proceeded, many of us were increasingly embarrassed to the point of being appalled. But it's hard to stop the train in a social event when you don't know what the next words will be. So it's something that's very regrettable. It's something that I'm embarrassed by. I wish I had found a way to intervene at the time without embarrassing Ralph Sultan and the other people on the call. But what's done is done, and we have to make amends, and that's why I apologized 2 days ago, and that's why I'm, through Jane, extending the offer to speak with Bowen Ma if she sees fit.
Then, on October 15th, a Zoom clip from a Chilliwack-Kent all-candidates meeting. BC Liberal incumbent Lori Thrones expressed opposition to the NDP's promise of subsidized contraception.
And the other thing that I feel about this is that it contains a whiff of the old eugenics thing where, poor people shouldn't have babies, and so we can't force them to have contraception, so we'll give it to them for free. And maybe they'll have fewer babies, so there will be fewer poor people in the future. And to me, that contains an odor that I don't like. And so I don't really support what the NDP is doing there.
Before the end of the day, Thrones quit the party. His name will remain on the ballot. Andrew Wilkinson.
Well, the comments from our North Vancouver Seymour candidate were inappropriate. She remains a candidate. She's a good, strong person who's very capable of what she does, and she made a mistake. Mr. Thronus's comments are totally inappropriate and totally unacceptable, so I phoned him yesterday with the intent of ending his candidacy, and 30 seconds later, he was no longer a candidate for this party.
The Zoom scandals were bookends to the highlight of the week, the only televised leaders' debate. BC Liberal Wilkinson, NDP's John Horgan, and Green Party's Sonia Firstenau faced off at the Chan Centre at UBC. Angus Reid Institute's Shachi Curl was the moderator. From that evening came the NDP blooper of the week.
But it's been 3.5 years since British Columbians had their say. And I believe as we're going into the recovery phase and making sure that everyone's safe, we should ask British Columbians what they think and where they want to go. I believe it's the right time to do that so we can all be focused on British Columbians after October 26th or 24th.
The highlight of the civilized 90-minute verbal battle? Green Party leader Sonia Firstenau. Just a month after winning her party's leadership, she took Horgan to task for calling the election.
To Mr. Horgan, to John, I will say, you know, you've thrown us into this unnecessary election. You've put people into a place of unease at a time when we're facing this global pandemic. And you're campaigning in different ridings, indicating that infrastructure that you have promised could be at risk with the outcome of this election. I don't think it's a time to put more fear into people's hearts when we need to be assuring them that we're here for them.
Ms. Firstenau, your time.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sonia, for the question. And I did grapple with the decision to call the election, but I did so because I believe we need to put the politics behind us. What we're seeing this evening is opportunities for British Columbians to hear from myself, Sonia, and Andrew on what their vision is for British Columbia. How are they going to solve the challenges we face because of COVID-19? None of us anticipated this. We didn't think about it in 2017, 2018, or 2019. We didn't think about it in February when we tabled our balanced budget. We only thought about it in March when it hit us right in the face. We need leadership now, not for a few months, but for the next few years.
It's astonishing to hear you say that you needed to put politics behind us by putting us into politics front and center in a campaign election when we didn't need it. And what we had in the legislature, what British Columbians were counting on and so grateful for, was we actually put a scientist out in front. We put politics behind us. All three parties indicated and acted on ensuring that we were putting people first. We were putting the needs that people had to have met in a global pandemic first. That's what we should be doing right now. That's what we're not doing. We're here on the stage debating things when we should be in the legislature making sure people are getting what they need.
It's never a bad idea to ask British Columbians where they want to go and who they want to lead them.
It is this a bad idea when you break an agreement and you break the legislation.
It was 3.5 years since the last election. That is an eternity with COVID-19. We need to make sure that British Columbians understand that we are going to stop this on the 24th of October and dedicate every ounce of our energy to making sure they're safe, making sure they're secure, and their families get through this. That's what we need to do. Us talking about how we get there is a good thing, not a bad thing.
I think what British Columbians need to understand is that you're willing to break your word, you're willing to break agreements, and you're willing to break legislation that you yourself passed in the legislature. Order to put the interests of your party, in order to seek that power and that majority
it's
that you so want
us, Sonia,
for
it's
obedience
not about us, it's
in the
about
legislature.
British Columbians. It's
and
about British Columbians. They deserve
that
support.
That's time, Mr. Horgan. We're moving on.
British Columbians concerned about China's foreign influence in BC politics and the human rights struggles of people in Hong Kong, Xinjiang, Inner Mongolia, and Tibet are polling candidates to find out where they stand on the Chinese Communist Party. On October 17th, Horgan was in Pitt Meadows when I asked him about the campaign.
Our next question is from Bob Mackin.
Yes, good morning. I want to ask about a campaign that's run by British Columbians who are concerned about human rights abuses against Hong Kongers, Tibetans, Uyghurs, and Mongolians. It's called No BC for Xi in reference to Xi Jinping. And they want candidates from all parties to take a stand against China's human rights abuses and interference in BC politics. The ambassador from China said this week that Canadians in Hong Kong may not be safe. The No BC for Xi website says you have not responded. So where do you stand? Where does the NDP stand? Do you oppose Chinese Communist Party influence in BC? And do you condemn China's human rights abuses?
I certainly condemn human rights abuses anywhere in the world. Bob, you would know that. As for this initiative, I haven't responded because I'm not completely aware, but I just actually became aware of it earlier in this week. I will take a look at it and ask staff where my response is, and we'll work on that. But for me, the challenges of British Columbians are stark right now, and I'm focused on getting us all safely through the pandemic. That's not to say that we turn a blind eye to abuses in any corner of the world. Largely a federal responsibility, as you know, but I believe leaders have a responsibility to speak up when these issues arise.
Bob, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. George Chow is your Minister of State for Trade, and he's met with Chinese Communist Party officials in Guangdong in December 2018. He's attended many events at the consulate, including a celebration of 70 years of Chinese Communist Party rule last year. The same website says that George Chow is quote-unquote CCP-leaning, meaning he supports the Chinese Communist Party in some way. Last fall and last winter, his constituency office spent $1,500 on newspapers that promote the Chinese Communist Party. The NDP was critical of the BC Liberals spending money in social conservative newspapers. How do you square the circle about using BC tax dollars to support friends of the Chinese Communist Party?
George Chow supports the BC NDP. George Chow supports the constituents of Vancouver Fraser View. I'm proud to have him on the team. He's made sacrifices and contributions for people in British Columbia for a long, long time, and I stand by George under all circumstances. With respect to advertising in newspapers, this is news to me, and I'll have a look at it, and perhaps we'll get back to you.
Thanks. That's all the questions we have.
Okay. Cool.
When John Horgan called the snap election on September 21st, the head of Elections BC used his emergency powers to make 16 changes to the way elections are run. There are fewer Elections BC staff and fewer scrutineers at voting stations, but a whole lot more mail-in voting. Maybe 40% of votes will be cast by mail. Bryce Cassavant says that these moves weaken or remove checks and balances and could affect the outcome. Cassavant was the NDP candidate in Oak Bay in 2017, losing to Green Party leader Andrew Weaver. You may remember Cassavant's name. He was the conservation officer fired when he disobeyed orders to destroy two black bear cubs in Port Hardy in 2015. 5 years later, he won a Court of Appeal decision over his firing, but the BC Government and Service Employees Union is hoping the Supreme Court of Canada will hear their appeal. Cassavant complained to Anton Bogman, the chief electoral officer of Elections BC, making the case for the election campaign to be postponed. He contends that Bogman misused emergency powers and the election should not have proceeded for October 24th. The NDP amended the fixed election date for October 16th, 2021, and promised to not call an early election in their confidence and supply agreement with the Green Party, but those both went out the window on September 21st. Cassavant also says the legislature should have been consulted by Elections BC before making any changes. This is my interview with Bryce Cassavant.
Tell us, first of all, about this complaint, why you decided to make this complaint, and what the complaint is.
We have to remember that this electoral proceeding that's happening right now is very rushed. And it is happening not under the Constitution Act and the fixed dates under our Constitution Act, which were previously agreed to, but rather in an alternative process, strictly under provincial legislation, under the Election Act. So the protective provisions under the Election Act that are there, once the legislature was dissolved, they have been, many of them, have been altered by, under an emergency power authorities of the chief electoral officer. And when I say protective provisions, we're talking about scrutineers in physical voting locations. We're talking about the number of electoral staff actually supervising physical voting locations. We are talking about ballot security provisions, voucher, or what we would know as witnesses, vouching for people who can't show ID when they're voting. Many of these parameters of the Election Act, which are there to protect the integrity of the democratic process, they've been rewritten, not by the legislature, not by an amendment to law having gone through the legislature, but rather under emergency orders. So my complaint is challenging the manner in which the emergency, these emergency orders and emergency powers of the chief electoral officer, one person, have been used. That's what my complaint is doing. I'm saying that when a single individual is allowed to essentially rewrite large portions of a statute outside of the involvement of the legislature and do so under an emergency power provision. This affects the integrity of the democratic process. And in our case in British Columbia, one of the orders that was issued, it's order number 008 for those that might be fact checking me later on, it actually contained a clause in it where it said, if electoral staff, so Elections BC staff, if they don't think they can get a voter a ballot back in time through the mail after it's been requested, they don't even have to send it out anymore. So that's a major red flag, because now we're essentially making what used to be a mandatory provision for a voter has a right to obtain a ballot, and it's a must clause in the legislation. Elections BC must mail a ballot to someone who properly requests it. Now, the chief electoral officer said, meh, you know, if we don't think we can get you one in time before this election, we're not even going to bother mailing it anymore. Well, this is extremely problematic.
And just talk about the overall concept of having an election at this time when it should have been, by law, October 16th, 2021.
We're seeing that rationalization of public safety, wartime style rule be applied in not an unforeseen issue, but a well-known issue that's within the prior knowledge. So we have states going, well, we have a health emergency, therefore we're going to remove all your rights. Therefore, we're going to change our democratic and electoral process. Therefore, we're going to do X, Y, Z. And it is completely unprecedented, but it is a trend. And when it happens somewhere else, it's easy to dismiss. It's easy to ignore. But when it happens in your own backyard, you better be paying attention. And it's happening in our own backyard. It's happening here in British Columbia right now. We have an election happening right now under not our Constitution Act, which was previously agreed to under a confidence and supply agreement, not a scheduled election, but rather being rushed through under emergency orders and powers. And those orders that have been issued, A, contain errors, admitted errors, and B, are largely removing various protective provisions of our democratic process. Well, why does this matter? When that writ was dropped, the job of the chief electoral officer and the first thing going through the mind of him and his staff should have been, how do we comply with the law as it lays now? Not how do we change it to rush this through? We've got a writ that was dropped. Okay, how do we protect everybody while complying with the legislation we have as it lays, you know? And that probably would have meant that the election would not have been held right now or in a few days here on October 24th. If there was going to be an emergency order issued using the pandemic as a rationale and using public safety as a rationale, really you only needed one order. And the order should have been, I'm adjourning the proceedings of this writ. And I'm consulting with my staff, and we've determined that we can't hold an election by the 24th while protecting everybody. Therefore, we're going to adjourn it until, pick a date in the future, until we have proper locations. Until, in accordance with the Election Act, we can make sure that all the parameters for scrutineers are there. We can make sure that the witness provisions are there. We can make sure we have proper staff supervising physical voting locations. We can make sure everyone's getting a ballot. Everyone has a right to vote. We can make sure that the ballot security provisions as outlined in the act are being met. Instead of doing that, they changed all of the statutory protective provisions, altered them, in many cases, created errors in the process, and they're rushing it through. So they haven't complied, even though this election isn't happening under the Constitution Act, like it should be. There was still protective provisions in the Election Act that would be protecting our democratic process, but we've removed them all or altered them. And that's the core issue of this election. That's the problem.
What do you think that this campaign might lead to as a legacy for the future, for future elections? Are we going to see elections go back to the way they used to in normal times once this pandemic is over and once there is the next election? Or do you fear that our democracy may be changed forever because the politicians who are running in this campaign and who will succeed in this campaign might look at this as, again, a cookbook for future, that they don't have to do the things they used to do during past elections. They can look at 2020 and say, it worked in 2020, let's try it again.
Yeah, I fear. And, you know, that's why I, in my complaint, in my closing comments, I called it a cookbook for a modern coup d'etat, because it is a recipe for disaster. And, you know, it is essentially paving the way for deviating from statutory democratic processes, deviating from essentially constitutionally agreed to electoral processes, which historically have had a fairly robust amount of integrity built into them by statutory design. And, you know, for those who seek power, for those who get a taste of power and want to keep it, being allowed to deviate from those protective provisions and essentially experimenting with the democratic process and how to circumnavigate it is very, very dangerous. And that is, through history, how you end up in totalitarian rule. And that's, you know, not to be an alarmist, but I'm a social scientist academically, you know, this is what my doctorate was in state authority through the use of our police act and other things, right? So, you know, I do have, as a social scientist, I do have a fear that we are establishing a framework and putting a precedent in place where you put the right people in the right positions and you just don't follow the law anymore. And that's a very dangerous place to be.
Well, thanks again to Bryce Cassavant for joining us on the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast, former NDP candidate from the 2017 election, former member of the Conservation Officer Service.
Chief Electoral Officer Anton Bogman reviewed Cassavant's complaint, but disagreed. The election is proceeding as planned for October 24th. Elections BC says the emergency changes were necessary and done in concert with the Provincial Health Officer and WorkSafe BC to protect voter and worker safety, and to adapt to the increase in vote by mail. The Breaker.News confirmed that proof of Canadian citizenship is not required at the voting station, photo identification is not mandatory, but even when photo ID is presented, the voter is not required to unmask. BC has no laws against ballot harvesting or ballot collecting, as they do in some U.S. states. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
To you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Abbotsford's Chase Claypool. Claypool caught 4 touchdown passes for the Pittsburgh Steelers in a single game in his second month as a rookie. In a fall without Canadian Football League play, it's nice to see a Canadian is an instant star in the National Football League. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 18th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on October 18th in 1867, the U.S. took possession of Alaska after buying it from Russia for $7.2 million? In 1929, women were declared persons under Canadian law. And in 2019, the first all-women spacewalk outside the International Space Station. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Now, get out and vote, British Columbia. Until next week.